Channel One ball, to Finlay Calder standing off, looks for support and gets it from John Beattie. He's on the French 22, but he's been robbed. I saw a white jerseyed figure pluck the ball from Beattie's grasp as he was capsized onto the ground.
We're all familiar that through years of playing sports, contact sports in particular, that you can sustain injuries to your knee or your back or your hips that over time build up into problems that never seem to go away. So we're all familiar with that's accepted. We all recognise it, we all grumble about it, you know, in the evening sitting down at night. But what we don't recognise is that the brain is just at much at risk of repetitive injury as your knee is, or your neck is, in fact, perhaps more.
I'm John Beattie, and for more than 20 years I played rugby at school, then at club level, and then for my country. In that time I've never been knocked out cold, but I've had my fair share of knocks, and seen so many that I can't actually conjure up a number for you. In this Medical Matters, I'm discovering whether the small hits and bumps I've taken, and which thousands of people playing sport take every weekend on pitches across this country, might be storing themselves up in our brains. Dr. Willie Stewart is consultant neuropathologist at the Southern General Hospital in Glasgow.
We've known for years that boxers can have problems with head injuries. So you may have heard of dementia pugilistica or punch drunk syndrome, where boxers who expose themselves to repeated head injuries or concussive head injuries develop long-term problems with memory and a dementia-like illness. More recently, though, our colleagues in America have encountered a similar type of abnormality in the brains of people who've played contact sports like American football or ice hockey, and you see a very similar pathology. I mean, it's almost exactly the same as you'd see in boxers. And so extending the concern that this concussion or head injury-related pathology that boxers used to get, and we all, you know, can caricature and imagine, actually could be something that other contact sports are at risk of as well.
When you're talking about taking a hit, it doesn't come much harder than in American football.
And he's missed. Oh, what a tackle that was by Rose.
Between 1,000 and 2,000 hits with more than 20 G force. So it's like a car hitting a brick wall at 20 miles an hour.
Dr. Bob Cantu is head of the Boston Brain Bank, a depository of brains, which includes many former American football players whose lives after retirement were blighted by emotional and intellectual problems. Many of these brains showed the unmistakable characteristics of a degenerative brain disorder, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Give me some symptoms of some of these retired players who you know about who are having problems.
Well, the symptoms are primarily medial temporal lobe problems and frontal temporal connections with the temporal lobe. And so they fall into the categories of difficulty that starts off with recent memory failure and then progresses to full-blown memory issues with executive function, can't multitask, lack insight, lack judgment, lack focus, lack attention. Those are intellectual symptoms. A whole other constellation of symptoms occur from the same area of injury, the medial temporal lobe, and deal with the emotional problems, such as depression, such as lack of impulse control, rage-type behaviors, that kind of thing.
When you look at the brains, what do they show you?
The brains need to be stained for a special immunostain that stains, it's called tau, T-A-U, and with the special immunostains, it shows up dark brown. And these brains have abnormal depositions of a form of tau, a hyperphosphorylated form, a toxic form that kills brain cells. And it occurs in a particular distribution that is distinctly different from what occurs in Alzheimer's disease.
Do you think we should be looking at rugby players?
Absolutely, and we're trying to do that with alliances right now that we're making, especially in Germany. But we're eager to do that anywhere in the world rugby's played, including the United Kingdom, of course.
I remember sitting a couple of times in a bar in my local club thinking, I can't actually see. It seemed to start at the side of my eyes and then come across with lights and flashes. But I was assuming that was an eye problem.
No, I mean that unfortunately, the way you describe it, could well have been concussion, and is the kind of symptoms that people might experience. It's a common misconception that concussion requires you to be knocked unconscious, and that actually only happens in a small number of concussions. For most people sustaining concussion, actually, we define it as any temporary disturbance in neurological or brain functioning, which is reversible.
Yellow jersey in the middle of the field calls for the scrum and Laidlaw will feed.
I remember once lifting my head from a scrum and the opposition scrum half ran through my head and my whole world started swimming. So what happened to my brain as my head hit the bloke's knee?
Your brain normally is floating inside your head. Imagine like an egg floating inside a shell.
The brain is violently being shaken in its water bath called the cerebral spinal fluid, but nonetheless it impacts the inner surface of the skull.
The brain then went from a standing start to a short, sharp, rapid acceleration, which causes the nerve fibers and the nerves to suddenly become stressed.
And as a result of that, there is a massive loss of function. Ions, which normally are inside nerve cells, go to the extracellular space. Neurotransmitters, which are needed to transmit impulses from one cell to the other, are massively and chaotically released. It loses its ability to transmit from one cell to another. Depending upon where that is, that determines whether you have visual symptoms.
Temporary problems with speech, it could be memory.
Balance symptoms.
Sleep disturbance, headaches, personality disturbance, mood disturbance. At the extreme level, loss of consciousness.
After the game, I remember being there in the bar afterwards with terrible visual disturbance. You know, almost blind, thinking I've got to sit quietly here because I can't see and pretend I'm okay and then wait for it to go. What was happening in my brain that made me blind?
The nerve fibres that are connecting your eye up to your brain, if you like, that allowing you to see, have in some way been damaged and stretched. And so temporarily, these nerves aren't working terribly well. So your eyes aren't working terribly well. But common of all concussions, or most concussions, is that these symptoms will resolve over a short space of time. Sometimes it can be hours, sometimes it can be longer than that.
Scott Weston is head of rugby at Glasgow Academy.
You don't tend to get head-on-head collisions in rugby as much. It's more heads, shoulders on joints. Could be ankles, knees, hips, particularly when we're tackling, when we're asking the boys to go lower, they're looking at the kind of hip area or the knee area when they're tackling, so it's those sort of areas that are the are most commonplace.
He goes that, I've gone to go that way and I have to change. What's my face going to hit? His knees, is that very...
Throughout my experience of playing school and club rugby and witnessing that with the schoolboys here, most of the collisions happen in one-to-one tackles where boys can be beaten by a quick step or a quite an effective attacker who maybe is able to position himself out with the natural reach of the defender, so they're stretching out of position to make the tackle. What can occur sometimes in collisions is in a ruck or a maul situation when the bodies go to ground. There are obviously sometimes knees and hips, and very occasionally boots, kind of moving about body parts, and there can be accidental collisions with either the ground or those body parts.
Rugby nowadays is much tougher than the game I played. Head-on tackles are common. Ever bigger players collide with ever more force. And despite the better coaching and more rigorous medical attention that's arrived as a consequence, there are still knocks.
Okay.
Willie showed me some of his brain samples. He stains them the same way as Bob Cantu.
So these are wee slices of brain.
These are little bits of brain, yeah.
So the irregular protein comes up as little brown dots under the microscope.
There's a patient who was clinically diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. This is the same area of the brain in somebody who was a boxer and had dementia pugilistica. And he's just a youngster at 60.
Similar.
Very similar, isn't it?
The brain of a boxer looks like the brain of somebody who's got Alzheimer's, with these little cells that have gone
So bad. Alzheimer's and a boxer, and that boxer pathology you can see in people with American football. So these are people who've been repeatedly hit. Here's a young
Willie guy, showed me quite a few more wee slices of brain from people who had experienced big hits to the head through maybe car crashes and who continued on with their lives before dying years later. And they all had those brown dots.
There's a lot more than I would like to have in my brain.
Just to sum up what you're saying, the brain of a man who died because of brain damage from a road traffic accident looks just like a boxer's brain, which looks like an American footballer's brain, which looks like somebody who's got Alzheimer's brain.
That's a fair summary, yeah.
Wow, I never thought this would look like this.
Surprising, yeah?
Shocking. How would a brain injury lead to something like Alzheimer's? What happens?
Oh, that's a great question. So the brain, you know, as it is in our heads at rest, is a slightly soft jelly, and it remains that way as we move our heads normally. If you apply sudden force to it, so, you know, like a knee hitting your head or a car or a baseball bat or whatever might hit your head, that sudden acceleration changes the brain from being a sort of soft jelly into being something much more rigid and prone to damage. And the bits that are prone to damage are the nerve fibres that come out of the nerve cells. And these nerve fibres or axons suddenly become more prone to fracturing and twisting and being damaged by the sudden change in acceleration. And at that point, where they get damaged, proteins can build up, which are very similar to the proteins you see with Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And I think it's this damage at the time of injury which can develop or produce proteins which in turn can accumulate in the brain, a bit like you see in Alzheimer's disease. Until reasonably recently, we thought that damage occurred. So time of injury, could be a concussive injury, could be a traffic accident, could be an assault. We thought it occurred at that time and then went away after a few weeks. It was just an acute thing. What we've more recently identified is that actually some of that damage can carry on for many years after the original injury in some people.
So a brain injury is permanent and the damage might not manifest itself till much later in life. Is that what you're saying?
The outcome after head injury is a combination of a couple of things. One is how hard you hit. But not everybody develops long-term problems. About a third of the people we looked at developed long-term pathology. And that's probably a genetic thing or the way the body responds to disease. So that's one thing. So it's how hard you hit combined with some genetic associations. The other thing that probably reflects how your brain responds is how often you hit it. So one big hit might not be good. Lots of little hits, possibly not so good either.
And that's the key point. As in rugby, we try to avoid getting the head involved in tackles, but there are those little bangs. And in another rather popular sport, football, minor head knocks can be experienced many times in a game simply by heading the ball. Claire Crosby plays centre-half for Edinburgh-based Spartans.
I do worry about heading the ball, especially recently. I've had a lot more headaches and stuff during the week, a lot more side effects than I have had previously, and it is a huge concern when I am playing football that I have to head the ball as many times as I do, because I'm finding maybe it's taken me till the Tuesday, Wednesday to actually feel back to my normal self again.
So I've been studying traumatic brain injury or concussion for many years.
Dr. Michael Lipton is from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York.
One of the things that we know is that it doesn't take a whole lot of a hit to necessarily cause someone to have long-term consequences. Many of our patients that don't necessarily do very well actually had a relatively minor injury. In addition to that, there's abundant evidence that having more than one mild concussion in succession is potentially much worse than just one of them in isolation. Yeah.
I've had a knock to the head by someone's hand, someone's fist. I've had a few head clashes with a few other people. I see a few of them being really serious, unfortunately. I was in America and I got a really serious head knock where I collided with another girl's head at the back of my head and was knocked out for a few minutes. The next thing I kind of realised, I was in the hospital and that's where I woke up. I had a concussion for about 2 weeks where I was constantly sick And basically, ever since then, I've kind of realised that there has been really, like, a long-term effect on that. Nearer and nearer the time I head the ball now, I feel a lot dizzier than I have been before.
You have caused some consternation in my house because my youngest child, our daughter, is a soccer player, international soccer player. When I said to her I was doing this programme that, you know, we're looking at not necessarily what, you know, the big, big bangs to your head, but lots of small, successive concussions, she was quite disturbed. You've already looked at some soccer players, have you?
We've studied about 40 players, yes. What we found is that in looking at this group of 40 amateur players, so these are guys who, they all have day jobs, but they play quite seriously. They're practicing and playing at least three times a week, at least about 9 or 10 months a year. And what we found was that as the amount of heading that they did increased, we were more likely to find changes in their brain when we put them in the MRI scanning machine that looked like what we see in people who have concussion or mild traumatic brain injury, so actual changes in the brain tissue. But importantly, we also found that the more that they head the ball, the more likely they were to do poorly when we tested their cognitive function, looking at things like memory and their speed of information processing.
So again, for every footballer listening, or you know, even social footballer, how are you damaging your brain when you're not taking major impacts, but these are just small impacts heading the ball? What's happening in your brain?
The message here is that a series of repeated, otherwise seemingly trivial impacts essentially add up to more than what you would think of the sum of the parts. So we all know that you can bump your head in a minor way and you don't instantly suffer adverse consequences. But what we're showing here is that if you do that repeatedly again and again and again, that it can have consequences. And one thing to recognize is that when we looked at this group in particular, and it's important to emphasize that this is a preliminary study where we only looked at 40 people, but we found that those who were heading the ball less than a certain threshold, which was in the range of 1,000 to 1,500 times in the past 12 months, that if you didn't exceed that threshold, you were rather unlikely to have the abnormalities that I just talked about a minute ago. It was only those really who exceeded that threshold that looked like they were at the greatest risk.
That sounds a lot. 1,000-odd times a year. But for those who play a lot of football, and not even the professionals, this is perfectly possible. Claire Crosby again.
We train 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we play on a Sunday. During the times, I'd probably say roughly during the week, I'd head the ball well over 100, 150 times in a week.
How much does your research apply to the bog-standard weekend fun-loving soccer or football player?
How this transfers on to someone who's playing more occasionally, we can't say without looking at those people. As a scientist, I really can't say. But the inkling from our data is that the less you do, and if you stay below those thresholds, you're likely to be okay. The only thing I caveat I would sort of throw in there is that we know in general in people who have head injuries, who have concussions, and this has nothing to do with soccer, this is just in head injuries in general, that there are certain individuals who have a greater likelihood of having a bad outcome. There are certain genetic markers, for example, that predispose people after a concussion to do poorly or to develop even Alzheimer's disease. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen, but it increases the risk. There is, we have to realize, the possibility that those things would apply to people using their head in soccer as well. That study hasn't been done, so you know I'm not saying anything definitive, but I think that the two bottom line points are that there's probably some amount of heading that's not good for anyone. We don't know exactly what that is, but the weekend player might be below that. And at the same time, there might be some individuals who maybe shouldn't be doing much heading at all because of their own personal makeup.
Now, you've got a wedding ring. But do you have children?
I do.
Two girls?
Yeah.
Would you want them to play a game where their brains were bumped around, whether it was lacrosse or it might be hockey? You suggested anything, you could fall down, hit your head off the AstroTurf.
Would you want them to play those sports?
I would have no qualms at all. I mean, I think the benefits of participation, you know, for kids in sport are far, far greater than any of the potential risks that might be there. We might anticipate being there from the very limited amount of information we have at the moment. The only kind of thing that we might kind of be interested in is that if kids do get head injuries or do get concussions, that perhaps the awareness of that, the awareness of how to recognise it, the awareness of how to best manage it, best look after kids with that. But even just, you know, as a parent, being aware of what a concussion might be, being aware of when, as a schoolmaster, when you know, kids are banging heads, or when a kid might get, you know, a bit fuggy after an injury, that maybe they should take some time out, maybe they shouldn't be rushed back to play again, you know, the next weekend. Maybe they should have a bit of quiet time. There's a thing called cognitive rest, where you take them away from video games for a bit and just give the brain, just as you would, you know, if you did your knee or you did your shoulder or you did your back, you would take some time out, give it a chance to recover, same with the brain.
Of course, sports like rugby and football are still great things to get involved in, and rugby in particular has become aware of concussion now. Scott Weston.
Once a boy's had a knock in the head, there needs to be a decision about when that boy is ready to come back and play rugby, whether that be the next training session, which could be 2 or 3 days later, or the Saturday, which may be 4 or 5 days later, or whether it's has been a severe concussion, at which point, if we send them to hospital, we will very much put them in the hands of the medical profession, and we will wait until a suitably trained medic has given ourselves and the parents information to see that boy is safe to come back and play rugby.
Bob, I played a bit of sport, and what I think I took from it is that you don't have to be playing at the highest level to be hurt. So, you know, if we start off at 5, 6, 7 years old running up and down the pitch, we get bashes, we're 15, 17, 25, still getting bashes. You don't have to be an international rugby player or professional NFL player to have had a bashed head. So how widespread do you think this might be in the larger population?
Well, I definitely know it's there. We don't know the prevalence or the incidence, but for sure it is there, and there have been a number of cases in the world's literature that did not come from the athletic field. The brain doesn't know whether it's violently rattled because somebody punched it in an abusive type of relationship, or you were having head-banging behavior as an autistic child, or a seizure disorder with a lot of head trauma. All of those situations are in the world's literature with chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Ford with the throw-in. Up go the jumpers. This time, Gilchrist got the ball. Glasgow almost through for the charge down, but Blair's kick is high. Oh. Rennie was there first. Tremendous collision of two bodies. A Glasgow player and Ross Rennie lined pole-axe there on the ground. That was some heavy collision in the Edinburgh 10.
From what you've seen and know, do you think in, say, rugby and football, we are careful enough that we have the right protocols in place to ensure that kids come back to a sport when they're really ready and not still with a brain injury?
I think kids is one issue. I mean, I think from the professional seniors, it's become a much bigger issue in the past few years, and the various rugby unions, rugby boards have taken great advances in terms of recognising concussion, how best to manage it.
For those of you who are listening to this transmission from Murrayfield on BBC Radio Scotland, can I just tell you that there's been quite a delay to the game because of the necessity to remove one of the Glasgow players very carefully indeed on the medical trolley from the field. There was a collision of bodies.
That's not quite the same experience. I don't think it's quite as high an awareness in the junior and school level, where I think people still believe that you need to be knocked out cold to have a concussion. The assessments of kids perhaps aren't in place, and yes, the knowledge that just like, you know, joints or other injuries that take time to heal and recover, I don't think people are fully aware that perhaps we should have a bit of time out with the brain as well to allow it to recover, and that's probably more a requirement in kids than it is in professional athletes. Professional athletes seem to be able to bounce back quicker, but kids, you know, seem to take longer.
Okay, well, I don't want to mention too many names, but if you look at some of the more peculiar happenings that have been carried out by former sportsmen, O.J. Simpson and others who have been shooting people, or they've committed suicide, or they've been beating up their wives, some of that might be because they played certain sports.
unquestionably. And the first individual you mentioned is a brain that probably is at the top of my list that I'd love to study if it ever becomes available.
Do you think there are lots of particularly men wandering around in their 50s, 60s, 70s who are having troubles, not because their brains have degenerated, but because unknown to them, they've played a physical sport, either boxing, or they have been show jumpers, or they've been rugby players, or American footballers, or wrestlers, or other such sports, and that's caused the problem?
Oh, absolutely, John. I think you're right on to it. I think this is a public health issue that goes far beyond our athletes. And we have no idea how many or what the incidence of, but some of the absolutely tragic, bizarre behavior, including suicides, including lack of impulse control, violent situations, I believe are occurring because people have damaged brains, and those brains were damaged either from falls off of bicycles or multiply abused or whatever. But it's not a biochemical issue. It's a structural issue.
I didn't think this would go this way. I'm happy to help if you want. You can have a look at my brain, and I can get some friends to have a look at their brains too. But the interesting thing for me would be, how would you know if it was brought about through rugby rather than a natural dementia course?
And ultimately, that's the big, what we call the big biopsy. We'd have to wait until we get a hold of your brain. However, there are classical things we can see with people with dementias. I mean, part of the problem is just making a diagnosis of dementia is difficult. What we would do, though, is suggest that we, as we've always done with all our pathology studies, with all our clinical studies, is to look at the patients with head injury and compare them against controls. So we would match you against somebody who, as far as possible, is you but without the head injury. It's impossible to do that genetically, but we can get somebody who's roughly the same age, who's living roughly the same way, but who hasn't had a head injury, and compare your results to their results. So compare how their brains look in fancy scans, compare the blood tests, and ultimately compare the pathology.
So this programme took me further than I've ever been before. And I'm serious. If Willie wants my brain, he can have it. And I'm going to get some other rugby pals to offer theirs too. But of course, I won't know the results. There's good and bad in all sports. Friendship and fun, I've had plenty of both, go along with injuries and trying times. What I've found out is that the little bumps I took as a matter of course over 20 years might have affected my brain, and maybe, just maybe, rugby players and footballers need to be more aware of that unseen damage. Let's hope that all sports have the brains to be brave and tackle head injuries, no matter how minor, head on.